We're in Nefesh HaChaim, and we're in Gate 2, Chapter 16. Gate 2, Chapter 16 is a little bit tricky. This section is a little bit complicated because it's Kabbalah, a little bit of Kabbalah over here. It's basic Kabbalah, but it's good to know this. It's very good. Every Jew should know this, basic Kabbalah. The rabbis tell us there are three parts of the soul. There's actually much more, but let's say three. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. The nefesh is the thing that keeps us alive, just being basic, very basic. The ruach gives us the ability to talk, and the neshama gives us the ability to think. The three different levels, nefesh, ruach, neshama. So now we were discussing how a person puts his neshama into the tefillah. When a person prays, it's got to combine the prayer with his soul. But when you pray, you've got to put your soul into the prayer. Because how does the prayers go up? And the answer is the prayers go up with your soul. Your soul is attached to the prayer. Together the soul pushes it up. So the soul comprises three parts. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. Nefesh is the lowest level. So the lowest level is the level of what's called Asiyah. Asiyah, which is action. Right? So Nefesh gives the person capabilities to act. I can move my hands. That's my Nefesh. Right? So Nefesh is the power of action. And the lowest world is the world of action. This is where we're in now, in the lowest world. Well, one of the lowest worlds. Let's say the lowest world. We're in the lowest world. It's called Olam Hasiya. The world of action. Action. So in the Nefesh, action. The Ruach gives a person the ability to talk. So that's the next level up. And the Neshama gives a person the ability to think. So now he says, this is Rav Chaim Volozhin. Rav Chaim Volozhin says, if you open a tikkun, which is a section like a Torah, you open a Torah, Chamisha Chumashei Torah, here. You open up a Chamisha Chumashei Torah, you open up a Chumash, you'll notice straight away, hopefully you'll see, there are three parts to what you see. If you read one passage, you'll see, we're going to pass this around, we're going to see, you'll see three things. I want you to show everyone these three things, okay? The three things are, you'll see, number one, you'll see letters. Right? Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin. That's letters. The letters are the Nefesh. The letters are the Nefesh of the Torah. They're the lowest level of the Torah, which corresponds to action. Okay? The trop, which is the tunes. Right, you have the tunes, the trop, nefesh, ruach, neshama. The trop, which is the tunes, and the vowels. You have the letters, you have the tunes, and you have the vowels. The tunes are the trop. Okay, so you have the letters, the trop, which are the tunes, and the vowels. Three things: nefesh, ruach, neshama. Nefesh, ruach, neshama. Three things. So let's just recap. So we said there's three parts to a person: the action, the speech, and the thoughts. The action is the nefesh, right? The speech is the ruach, and the thoughts are the neshama. They're associated with these three things: nefesh, ruach, neshama. And the same thing applies in the Torah. You have letters, and then you have the vowels, and then you have the trop. Okay. So the trop is the higher level. The trop is the neshama. The trop gives the person this ability of putting his soul into the words. Thank you so much. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Niya Bidvaro. So let's recap. You have three things. Pass this around and show everyone the three things. The letters, which is like the nefesh. The vowels, which are like the ruach. And the trop, the cantillations, which are the tunes, which are like the neshama. So you have the letters, you have the vowels, and you have the trop. Okay? Or Sephardim we call them ta'amim. In Hebrew they call ta'amim. Trop is, I think, Yiddish. So let's stick to the Sephardic pronunciation. The ta'amim. It gives it the ta'am.
Is it also spice?
Yes, the ta'am is spice. What gives the Torah its spice? The tunes. Because the tunes are the elocution. How do you read the Torah? So you just, Bereshit bara Elokim, you say, Bereshit bara Elokim. Right? So the tunes give it the time, give it some kind of spice. taste. The taste is the tunes. So let's recap. A person is made up of three building blocks. What are the three building blocks in a person? Let's say it together. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. The Nefesh gives the person the ability to act, to move. The Ruach gives the person the ability to speak, speech. And the Neshama gives the person the ability to think. So sometimes you see people who can't speak. Something wrong with them. Or you see people who can't think. They're in a coma. There's something not there. The part of the soul is not there. And that's what maybe they're half dead. You know, that's part of the soul is not there. The Neshama part. They're breathing. They're not talking. And they're not... The brain is not working properly. So there's something missing over there in the Ruach and the Neshama. So that's a spiritual prognosis. Just like you go to a doctor, he tells you what's wrong with you physically. A mikubal will say what's wrong physically, spiritually. There's something wrong with the nefesh, something wrong with the ruach, something wrong with the shama. So these are three areas that we have to fix in ourselves. And what does a person do when you pray? And the answer is we're trying to link our nefesh, ruach, and shama with the prayer. How do you link your nefesh, ruach, and shama with the prayer? Because the nefesh is the letters. So you look at the letter. Focus on the letter. That's why we talked about last week how important it is to look at the letters. The Vilna Gaon, when he prayed, even though he knew everything by heart, he knew the whole Talmud by heart, he knew the whole Torah by heart. But he prayed, he read with a book. To look at the letters. Number two is the Ruach, is the vowels. How do you pronounce the letters? You have to look at the vowels. Put the vowels with the letters together. And then, if you want to sing it, you have to have the Ta'amim. Right? You have to have the tunes. The tunes correspond to the neshama. Accordingly, he says, the letters correspond to action because letters without vowels, marks, represent nothing but the actions of the scribe. So look at the letters in the Sefer Torah. They represent the actions of the Sofer. Right? The Sofer wrote the letters. You have to now superimpose on those letters the vowels. The vowels are not in the Torah. The letters were written by the scribe. What do the letters represent? Action. Which part of your soul is the action? Nefesh. So nefesh. So it represents the actions of the sofer. You can tell by seeing the letters how good the sofer was. You can see his action was clean. It was straight. It was smooth. It was accurate. The actions of the sofer. So when you're reading something, you're seeing the actions of the person who wrote it. So everything today is printed. So you can see also the printing. Was a pretty good quality, so you're seeing the actions of it. But when you add the vowels, then you're able to talk. And without the vowels, you can't talk anything. You can't say anything. Right? Without vowels, you don't know how to pronounce something. The vowels are the ruach. The vowels give you the ruach, the ability to talk. Without the vowels, there's no ability to talk. So letters cannot be pronounced without vowels. So the letters without vowels are nefesh. With the vowels is the nefesh and the ruach. So the vowel marks represent the ruach. Because the combination of letters and vowels enable a person to speak the words. And speech is ruach. So now you have the ability to say the words. And you're going to speak the words out. And the speech is ruach. Okay. Now the marks on top. Which is interesting because we don't have these marks in a sidur. These marks in the Sefer Torah. You don't have the marks in the Sefer Torah either, but I'm saying when you read the Torah, you have to put these marks in. You have to learn these marks. That's why it's so hard to read the Torah. Why? You have to know the vowels by heart, and you have to know the tunes by heart. That's why it's so hard. So nefesh is there, right in front of you. The letters are right there. But there's no vowels. You have to put them in. And you have to also add the tunes. So tunes represent the neshama, because they tell us how to group the words together, where the sentence ends. You can imagine there's no commas and periods in the Sefer Torah. There's no marks at all, just letters. So now how do I know how to read the verse? How do I know where to stop? That's why it's Friday, we have someone standing next door giving the signs. Go, stop, sign language. But a good person who knows how to read doesn't need signs. He knows all by heart. It's very hard to get it by heart. Yesterday we had a very good reader. Didn't need any signs at all. He memorized it. He memorized everything. He memorized the words. He memorized the signs. He remembers the vowels. He remembers the tunes. So that's the best. That's the ideal. But a lot of people just can't memorize everything. You need someone over there to give sign language, to give the signs and how to stop, where to stop, how to stop. So that's the neshama. So the elocution, when a person gives meaning to the words, when you talk. So if you talk, you just talk in monotone. I went to the store today and I bought the carrots. Just keeps on going. That's a monotone. There's no neshama in it. There's ruach, but there's no neshama. The person who talks and he says and pronounces every word and gives you the exciting, the feeling behind it, puts his neshama in it. Then you put your neshama in the words. How do you put your neshama in the words? By giving it feeling. So when a person prays to Hashem, so now we can understand. When you say the letters by themselves without any vowels, you're not saying anything. It's just a jumble. You're reading letters. Bet, resh, vav, chav, baruch. I'm just reading letters. With the vowels, now they make sense. I'm putting my ruach in it. And when I pray with my heart, I'm putting the neshama in it. So that's what we're talking about. When you pray, a person's got to pray all these three things. So normally, most people use the letters. You can't pray without letters. And most people use the vowels. You can't pray without vowels. You get it wrong. That's why it's important to pray accurately. Just every word should be accurate. And then, the main thing is now to put neshama in it. How do you put your neshama in it? Feeling. If there's no feeling in the prayer, it's called non-neshama. So you have nefesh, you have ruach, non-neshama. So it only goes up to a certain level. It doesn't go up all the way. It goes up to a certain level. So the highest level of tefillah is pouring out one's nefesh, ruach, neshama. This is a very high level of tefillah. Is every word a prayer. That's why it's important to pray fast. You go, buh, 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 buh. You know the famous story, it says there was a guy who prayed very fast. And when he prayed, he goes, so, okay. So he stops his Shemoneh Esrei, he says, sees the rabbi, he says, Rabbi, hello, how are you doing? The rabbi says, buh, 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 buh. He says, Rabbi, I'm talking to you nicely. Why don't you talk to me nicely? He said, I'll talk to you the way you talk to God. You say, buh, 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 I'll talk to you like that. So the man says, you can't compare. When I talk to God, it's like a baby crying for its mother. So the baby says, wah! And the mother says, oh, the baby's tired, he wants to sleep, wants to change the diaper, wants hungry. So when I pray to God, obviously Hashem knows what I want. So the rabbi said, you want to be a baby all your life? When are you going to grow up and speak properly to God? So it's very important. See how critical it is to pray. Number one is to say the words properly. So pray. So some people can pray fast. Some people can't pray fast. You can't pray fast. You don't have to pray fast. You pray at your own pace. A person's got to pray at their own pace, saying every single word distinctly. Every single word has got to mean something. Number two is you got to say it with the vowels. It's got to pronounce it properly. And number three is you have to put your heart into it, because your heart is your soul. Your heart is your soul. So that's what you can understand now. When Hashem says, love God with all your heart. What do you mean love with your heart? Love Him with your emotions. Your neshama is your emotions. You're putting fire into something. You can't have a locomotive without fire. Except for an electric one. So, a steam locomotive needs the steam, needs the fire. The fire is the heart. Fire is. So the fire from the heart pushes up the prayers. That's the neshama. So without these things, the Torah would be unable to be read. So the highest level of tefillah is combining with the letters. Letters, nefesh. The vowels, ruach. The meaning behind it, the heart of it, is the neshama. Okay. So a person, when they pray, they have to express their longing to link their nefesh, ruach, neshama to the words in order to connect these words to the higher worlds. So obviously this is a very big secret. If people don't learn this book, you'll never know the secret. The secret of getting your prayers up higher is to push them up with the energy of your soul. Because how you put, you're pushing something physical into the spiritual world. How do you push something physical into the spiritual world? By using one's soul, which is spiritual, to push it up. So interesting, because we do this automatically without even knowing what we're doing. Every time a person does a mitzvah, you're taking something physical and you're making it spiritual. Right? Every time you say a bracha, you have nefesh, which is the letters, saying the bracha, baruch atah, which is the letters, and you have the vowels, all you need is the emotion. The emotion is, thank you Hashem, for giving me the opportunity to do a mitzvah. Thank you Hashem, for giving me the mitzvah to give, sanctify me. So that emotion is the neshama. So a lot of people just say, we do it by rote. That's the problem with doing mitzvah by rote. We do a mitzvah by rote, but there's no emotion. I've done this before. I've prayed 50 times before, so I'm praying today, but it's not, there's no heart in it. We talked about Hannah. Hannah, when she prayed, she actually poured her soul before God. So that's what Rav Chaim Volozhin is basing himself. We just read today the Psalm for Rosh Chodesh. How does the Psalm for Rosh Chodesh start off? Barchi nafshi et Hashem. My soul will bless you, Hashem, David HaMelech says. My soul will bless you. And the answer is, he's putting his soul in the prayer. My soul will bless you. Is my emotions are in the prayer, and my emotions are my soul. My soul is in the prayer. The letters are the nefesh, the vowels are the ruach, and the emotion is the neshama. Coming to it. He doesn't actually mention Tagim, but he says there's a high level. Yeah. And obviously there is. So the Tagim is a higher level. Because we know there are Tanta. Right? Tanta. What's Tanta? Tagim. Tanta. Nun. Nekudot. Tagim, Nekudot, Ta'amim, Otiot. So there's four. Actually, thanks so much. There's four things. So let's, before we get to the fourth level is so high, we're going to see it's dangerous. Those who got to the fourth level, Hashem says, time to leave the world. So, who got to the fourth level? Eliyahu Navi and Hanoch. We're going to see. So there's another soul, your question, exactly your question. There's another soul above these three. The Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida. There's Chaya and Yechida. We call it Narnachi or Naranchai. Narnachi or Naranchai. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, Yechida. We can't get to these higher levels. Chaya, Yechida. Whoever gets to the Chaya, it's time to leave the world. They're too great for this world. Amazing, amazing. So there's another soul above the Neshama called the Shoresh of the Neshama, the root of the Neshama. The Zohar calls it Chaya or Yechida. The truth is, there's two different levels. A spiritual level that was reached only by Adam before his sin. The level of Adam before his sin. When he sinned, it was taken away from him. Ever since Adam, no one reached this high state. When Hanoch reached this level, inheriting the quality of Adam, the world could not cope with his Kedusha. And he was forced to leave the world. What does it say by Hanoch? And Hanoch lived so well, and he was no more. Hashem took him. V'lakacho Hashem. Hashem took him away from the world. He was too big for this world. He goes up there, he becomes an angel. Who became an angel? Hanoch became an angel. One of the highest angels, called the Memtet. And who else? So that's what the Torah says. He entered Gan Eden without dying. Hanoch was taken up alive. Why? He got to the state of the Chaya. That's his high level. Eliyahu too departed this world when he attained a small portion of this heavenly splendor. As it says, Hashem said, the world cannot cope having you among the living. This high level of Kedusha will remain beyond our reach until the resurrection of the dead. So it's going to be a different level of living. You know, this is the Mikubalim thing. This is the way the Mikubalim, the Ramban, that Olam Haba is on this world. Olam Haba is in this world, what does that mean? The body will be on a high level. We'll all be on a high level, which is the level which we're talking about over here. So it will be all beyond our reach until the resurrection. As mentioned, this aspect of the soul is called the Shoresh HaNeshama, the root of the soul. So Chaya is a man's power of thinking, which is the root of life. But truth is, we know Neshama is thinking. It's what thinking we are. So this is talking about the Ratzon. Behind your thoughts, the subconscious. Behind a person's thoughts are his subconscious. If you can tap into your subconscious, now the subconscious, all the subconscious focuses in on is good. The subconscious, unfortunately, our subconscious is beyond our control. So here we're talking about people who reach the level of angels. Why? Even their subconscious was in their control. So now we can understand a little bit. Hanoch, subconscious was in control. Eliyahu Navi, subconscious was in control. So although Adam did teshuva, his chaya and his yechida were not returned to him. Okay. So at least two out of all the, can you imagine, all these generations, there's only two people who reach that level. Hanoch and Eliyahu Navi. So they were both taken alive. Who else was taken alive? Anyone else taken alive? It says Yeshua ben Levi. Yeshua ben Levi, but he tricked the Satan. He jumped over the walls of Gan Eden. So he wasn't really taken. So this is called the Shoresh HaNeshama, the Chayal Yechida Shoresh HaNeshama. For example, a person who says, who thinks in his head, I enjoy reading this book. How does that work? He's using his neshama. I'm reading this book. It's the neshama, which is thinking. It gives us an understanding to think. But the root of the thinking is hidden. That's the subconscious. That root of the soul is what gives a person the subconscious, which gives them the ratzon, the will. Let me give you a simple example. You walk into someone's house, Shabbat, and they're looking through the Shulchan Aruch. They have this big book in front of them. They're opening up the book, and they're looking for something. What's going on? Say, what are you looking for? So I'm looking to see if I can play chess on Shabbat. You know, chess, the game, chess. I'm looking to see if I can play chess on Shabbat. So now, he's learning Torah, right? What's the motivation behind learning Torah? He wants to play chess. So the neshama is there. The neshama is what he's thinking about. What is he thinking about? He's thinking Torah. But what is the root cause of the thinking Torah? It's not pure thought. It's an impure thought. And that's the difference between Eliyahu Nabi and us. When we do mitzvah, we may have some kind of background and thought behind it, which is not pure. Where Eliyahu Nabi and Hanoch, pure, 100% pure. The subconscious was pure. And that's the root of the neshama. So they reach that level of subconscious, which is totally pure. It's the level of an angel already. Okay. That's our battle. If we can get to that purity, but nevertheless, we still have to, we're going to see. A person's going to do a mitzvah even for the wrong reasons, because eventually they'll do it for the right reasons. So a person says, I can't reach a level of purity, I'm not going to do the mitzvah. Wrong. Do the mitzvah anyway. Don't say, I had a case here once. A young boy came to me, he was 17, 18 years old, teenager. And he said, Rabbi, he says, I come to shul, but I don't come for the right reasons. I come for the kiddush. I come for the socializing. Should I still come? That was his question. Because his thought was, I'm not doing it for the right reasons. Maybe I shouldn't do it. I'm a hypocrite. So of course you come. Come and enjoy. Baruch Hashem today, he's a very religious person. He's married, children, Baruch Hashem. So, don't use this as an excuse. This is not an excuse. It's a level to get to, but it's very hard to get to the level. So everyone does mitzvot. We have to do mitzvot, even with the wrong reasons. And eventually, Bezrat Hashem will get to the right reasons. But now we have to know, what is the highest level? The highest level is the purity of motive. Right? And there's a beautiful story, it says, of a Marano. You know Marano? Marano were the Jews in Spain who were pretending to be Christian. But some of them ran away. And one of them came to Tzfat in Israel. One of them came to Tzfat. And he heard the rabbi talking about sacrifices, korbanot. And one of the sacrifices is on Shavuot. We're coming to Shavuot. The sacrifice was two loaves of bread. They brought two loaves of bread to the temple. And the rabbi is talking about two loaves of bread, how what a big mitzvah is. So the guy goes home to his wife. He says, I want you to bring me two loaves of bread. I said, why? What for? The rabbi said, today you're going to give two loaves of bread to God. So, okay. So every Friday, he put two loaves of bread in the Aron HaKodesh. Don't try this, though. He puts the two loaves of bread in the Aron HaKodesh. He's giving it to God. So one day, the rabbi was there. He sees the guy go, two loaves of bread in the Aron HaKodesh. He said, what are you doing? He said, you told us that Shavuot, you're going to make two loaves of bread. So I said, every week we'll do it. No, not just Shavuot, let's do it every week. We told my wife, let's do this mitzvah every week. Why not? Let's put two loaves of bread for Hashem every week. Guys, the rabbi says, you're crazy. That's not what I said. It's only Shavuot and only the Beit HaMikdash. Today we don't do these things. But Hashem takes them. Every time I come, I open the thing and it's not there anymore. It's gone. Hashem took it. He said, just sit down over here. Let's see who takes it. They sat there for half an hour. Straight comes the Shamash. The Shamash is the person, the janitor of the shul. He goes straight to the Aron HaKodesh, takes the two loaves and walks out. He's done this many times. Every Friday, he finds two loaves. So he takes it, goes. So the guy says, look, you see, you're an idiot. You didn't understand. You made two loaves for nothing. Waste of time. Guys, he's broken. He's shattered. He goes home. The rabbi said, we make a mistake. Sorry. I don't. So it's terrible. The ending of the story is not so pleasant. But it says over there in Shamayim, in heaven, Hashem never got so much pleasure from a person's deeds as he got from that person. Why? Because his heart was pure. So he did something for the sake of purity completely. Even though he did the wrong thing, he thought he was doing the right thing. But he did it for purity, and that purity, Hashem says, best purity. I love the purity of the deed. You know, it says when a person offers a sacrifice, it goes up, reach nichoach. It goes up as a pleasant smell for Hashem. A pleasant smell for Hashem. Well, Hashem smells. Hashem. No. The commentary says it's talking about the heart of the person. The person does it with the beautiful intentions. That is the pleasure that Hashem gets. The pleasure that Hashem gets is knowing the person's intention. The intention was good. So that's the beauty of learning how to pray properly. Learning how to pray properly is putting your heart into the prayer. You're attaching the nefesh, which is the letters, with the ruach, with the vowels, with your heart. So praying with the heart, and that's the beauty of how Chana prayed. So now we're moving on to chapter 3, which is a little bit less spiritual, a little bit less, not much. And now he's going to discuss a very important word. And we had this word in the Haggadah. Baruch HaMakom. Blessed be the place. Who is the place? Hashem. Hashem is the place. So the question is, why is Hashem called the place? So he quotes a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. In chapter 2, Mishnah says, in Mishnah 18, it says, when you pray, don't make your prayer a set routine, but rather beg for compassion and favor before HaMakom. Don't make your prayer like a monotony. Just keep on going on like, it's like a habit. Don't make your prayer into a habit. Right? But make it into a prayer for compassion. But you see some people praying, and they're praying with all their heart. That's how a person should pray. A person should just pray. Just like a regular, unfortunately, that's what happens. We get so used to praying. Pray three times a day, then you get too used to it, it becomes like a habit. A person's got to put their heart into it, that's what I'm saying. You got to put your heart into it, Pirkei Avot says. A person's got to pray and beg for compassion and favor before HaMakom. Why does it use the word HaMakom for God? Actually, before Hashem, before you came up, why does it say the word HaMakom? So, in using, this is now Rav Chaim Veloshin is going to explain the word HaMakom, the place. In using the divine name of HaMakom, which we said, if you remember, it's a gematria, HaMakom. What's a gematria, HaMakom? Hey, 5. Mem, actually, let's skip the hey. Mem is 40. Kuf is 100. Vav is 6. And Mem is 40. 186. Makom is 186. If you take Yud and square it, 10 times 10 is 100. Hey squared 25. Vav squared is 36. And Hey squared is 25. 186. Okay. Yud K Vav K squared is the same as Makom. So, why did the rabbis pick over here the word Makom? The Mishnah Pirkei Avot, in chapter 2 also, in chapter 2:15, also compares the words of the rabbis to a glowing coal. When the rabbis gave us the information, it was like a coal. It's compared to a coal. So today we don't really see coals unless you have a coal fire. Anyone have seen a coal fire? The coals, they glow. Hot coals glow. A glowing coal, the words of the rabbis like glowing coals. What's going on? A glowing coal glimmers, but the more you stir it, it starts becoming into a flame. So a glowing coal is glowing. If you stir it, it becomes a flame. And you can enjoy its light, and you can use its warmth, but don't touch it. Because if you touch it, you're going to get burnt. So too, the rabbis say, is the words of the great rabbis of the old, that they look small. These words look very small, but they're like a glowing coal. Don't go too deep into it. You get burnt. Sit by it, come close, but don't go too deep into it. He says, look at this. The deeper one delves into their words, examining and analyzing them, the more that person's eyes light up with dazzling, blazing light of wisdom. As the rabbi said, delve into the Torah. Hafoch ba, kidekula ba. Right? Delve into the Torah because everything is in the Torah. So everything, it's amazing how much you can learn information from the Torah by delving into the Torah. But a person's going to be careful not to get too close to the kolot. The Torah is like a coal. That's what we're saying. You get too close to it, you get burnt. You find the four great rabbis who entered the Pardes, right? What are the names? Ben Zoma went crazy. Got burnt. Ben Azai died. He got burnt. And Elisha ben Abuya became, whatever, Acher, he became someone else. So they got burnt by the coals. So don't go too close. And that's why a person should not learn Kabbalah, you know, until they get to the age of 40 or they're married, whatever. It's Friday, we're more lenient. But a person's got to be stable and got to be learned. He can't just delve into the Kabbalah straight away, because then he's getting too close to the coals, to the fire. Don't get too close to the fire. So Mishnah says, warm yourself by the fire of the rabbis, but don't get burnt. Don't get too close. So don't turn away completely from pondering the rabbi's words, but you will not benefit from the wisdom. On the other hand, don't get too close, because you will get burnt. Stay at a safe distance. So one's got to know how far to go into something. How deep do you want to go? Don't go too deep, because you're getting too close. The same holds true with the word makom. Everyone knows its plain meaning is place or space. So the rabbis hinted at a very important idea. The reason for calling Hashem Hamakom is explained by the rabbis in Bereshit Rabbah, in the Midrash, in connection with the word He Yaakov came Bamakom. He arrived at the place. What place did he arrive at? Har Moriah, the Mount Moriah. He calls it Hamakom. So the Gemara over there asked, what is the whole, why is Hashem called by the place, by the name place? Because he is the place of the world, but the world is not his place. He is the place of the world. The world is inside God, but he is not inside the world. Because the world is inside God, but God is not inside the world. So we have to understand that. What does that mean? That means the whole universe is inside God. God is the place of the universe. When we think of the universe, we think of something vast. The universe, the physical universe is vast. The physical universe is inside the place. The universe is inside the place. What is the place? The place is God. God is the place of the universe. Everything is inside God. All of us were inside God. Okay? Because God is massive. God is bigger than the universe. Everything is inside God. So that's why he's called the place. That's what the Gemara says. He's called the place because we are inside him. The world is inside God. God is not inside the world. The world does not contain God. Obviously it does. But in the sense that Hashem is bigger and Hashem created the world. So the world is inside God. The world did not create God. God created the world, and therefore the world is inside him. And when Moshe Rabbeinu asked to see God's face, what does Hashem say? Hine makom iti. There's a place next to me. Okay. So Midrash says, the place of the world is dependent on me. Makom iti. The place of the world is dependent on me. I am not dependent on the place. So the simple meaning is, just as a place supports an object, so Hashem, the place that supports and sustains the world. So let's just think about this. Where is this book? On the table. What is supporting the book? The table. What is supporting the world? Hashem. So the place of the world is Hashem. Hashem is the place of the world. The world is inside Hashem. Hashem is supporting the world. That's what it means. That's a simple explanation. The Midrash says, Hashem says, the place of the world is dependent on me. I'm not dependent on the world. The simple meaning of this remark is just as like the place supports an object standing on it, so is Hashem the place that supports and sustains the world and all creations. If Hashem would remove his attention from creation for an instant, all the worlds would cease to exist. Hashem keeps the world alive every second of the day. How does he keep the world alive every second of the day? By thinking about it. It's a very interesting concept. Let me give you an example. How do we apply, how do we see this in our lives? Anyone over here have had dreams? Anyone, have you had a dream? Yeah? So now, in your dream, are those things real or imaginary? I mean, are they real on some level? Yeah, they're real. If you had a, especially a nightmare. Especially nightmares. So vivid. And you wake up, oh, scary. It's really vivid. Some dreams are really vivid. So on some level, when you're dreaming, you created something. They're alive in your dream. What happens when you stop dreaming? What happened to those things when you stop dreaming? Gone. Disappear. Hashem is thinking about us. When he's thinking about us, we're here. If he stopped thinking about us 1 second, the world would disappear. If you stop thinking about the world, 1 second, the world will disappear. So in a sense, the world is existing in Hashem. He's the place of the world. That's what it means. Hashem is the place of the world. What does that mean? Hashem keeps the world going. Because where are we existing? Where do we exist? We exist inside it. We exist in it. Right? Hashem said, let there be this. What do you mean Hashem said? Hashem doesn't have to talk. Hashem willed it. He willed this. He created in his head. Amazing. Hashem has no head. Just give you an example. It's an example. So that's what it means. Hashem is the place of the world. Hashem supports and sustains the world and all creation. If he would remove his attention from creation for an instant, all the worlds would cease to exist. And that's what Prophet Nehemiah says. You are keeping them all alive. And we say this every day in our prayers. Mechadesh b'tevor b'chol yom tamid. Hashem renews creation every single day with his goodness. Hashem keeps creation going. This is the cornerstone of the Jewish faith. The fact that Hashem created the world and Hashem keeps the world going is the cornerstone of the faith. For this reason, Hashem, the Zohar describes Hashem as the soul of all souls. You understand? What is the soul of all the souls? What is the source of all the souls? Hashem. Everything came from Hashem. Just like the soul gives the body the ability to live, so too Hashem gives the worlds the ability to live. Hashem is the soul of the worlds. That's the analogy. Just like the soul gives the body the ability to live, Hashem gives the world the ability to live. So the Gemara draws a parallel between the existence of the universe through Hashem's power and the existence of the body through the power of the soul. Just like Hashem nourishes the whole world, so does the soul nourish the body. So that's what it means. Hashem is the place of the world. Hashem is the makom. The world rests on God. How does the world rest on God? Because God keeps the world going. That's what it means. When the world rests on God, it's like your whole household rests on you. What does that mean? You keep it going. If it wasn't for you, you keep the house going. So, that's what it means. Hashem is the place of the world. It's nothing to do with the world resting on Hashem, in a sense. Okay, I think we'll stop here. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. But what do we get out of this class? And the answer is, we got this.